Good morning, my fellow Michiganders. Good morning, my fellow Americans. Welcome to the Grassroots Army Podcast. And I'm really excited to have Mr. Scott McMahon on this morning to talk about some of the findings that he's been investigating, because that's one thing that we just want to be told is the truth. And that's one thing that happens, unfortunately, in politics, is we get a lot of information, a lot of misinformation. And people like myself is just like, well, hey, you know what? What's the truth? Give me the truth. We'll figure it out. You know, let's find out who the bad actors are. And unfortunately, it seems like Scott has found some things within the grassroots, not only in the state of Michigan, but in other battleground states. And I really feel that you all need to hear this. And I know it's going to probably upset a lot of folks, but that's my job, is to bring conversation, spark conversation, and hopefully get the truth or some idea of the truth so we can be empowered with our decisions on how to move our local communities, our state, but most importantly, our country. So, Scott, well, thank you so much, and welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you so much, Garrett. I'm really grateful to be here.
Well, can you kind of just give folks the background, who you are, how you started to dig into this stuff and the information, and we'll just let the conversation evolve from there.
Sure. Yeah, I've been in real estate for the last 10 years, and I've always had a passion for and an interest in journalism and writing. And back in October of last year, I kind of quit real estate and got into journalism, working for a small town paper in Lapeer, a buddy of mine that started up a conservative small town paper. And so I was writing everything from, you know, I did everything from sports to, you know, police reports to what was going on with the school board and also state issues. And in December, I started looking into what was going on in the division in the Republican Party. And I ran for county commissioner in 22. I lost pretty narrowly, but I was running as an ultra MAGA candidate. You know, I really considered myself to be grassroots, America first, all that. And I still do. But what I have found over the last 4 months has really changed the way that I see the world and the Republican Party and even my role in it. And it's just by following the evidence.
And may I just, like, what you just said is, it gave me the chills. Mm-hmm. It's because I think people, like I just said before, they need information. They need, because what happens, what I feel is, you know, there's a lot of misinformation that goes on, and they go to their little echo chambers on Telegram, start spreading all this stuff, and they come out and they just spread all this misinformation out on social media, and it creates all this infighting. And unfortunately, the folks that are spreading this information, they probably don't even know that they're getting played. Right?
That's right.
We have some people at the top, and we're going to dig into that, that just basically uses these fired up kind of words to get everybody riled up. And then they basically throw gasoline on the fire, and these people just come out and they start attacking, you know, candidates and everything else. And that's why I've been pushing like crazy, is we have to stop the infighting. And I'm their biggest enemy, obviously, because I continue to spread the message of unity. I always done that. And I always rely on Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not talk poorly about any other Republican candidate. And I have it, and I never will, because we're all on the same side. But they obviously don't want that. And they want to have this mentality that if you don't agree with me 100% of the time, that I hate you, I attack you, you're a rhino and everything else. Yeah. Let's go back to, like, your investigation. Like, let's just tell the audience, what have you found so far?
Yeah. So the conclusions that I have come to by following the evidence have really shocked me. And I think that they've shocked a lot of people. What I found initially, so as I was looking into this and talking to people within the party, really on both sides of the issue, is that both sides were often saying the exact opposite things, the exact opposite things. And so that can't exist while one side is being truthful and you know, where they're both being truthful. So it takes a lot of work to investigate the evidence with an open mind to discover where the truth is. And that doesn't mean that one side is always truthful. You know, there certainly have been mistakes on the part of the side that removed Christina Caramo. However, what I found is that, and really the first thing that shocked me the most was that Christina Caramo didn't step down when she was removed on January 6th. Because somebody who runs an organization, I mean, you've seen this in business, Garrett. I mean, if you, anyone who cares about the organization that they're running, if they're asked to step down by, you know, even if it's not the majority, if they're asked to step down, they're going to step down for the good of the organization, especially a political party, especially in a, such a critical election year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially, I mean, this is not your typical election year by far. We all feel it. This is it. I mean, if we don't win in November, this country's done. I mean, look what's going on in the world right now. In 3.5 years, I call him the Weekend at Bernie's candidate. This guy's literally destroyed our country, made us very weak, where now we have Iran throwing missiles at Israel. We have Russia fighting with Ukraine. We have, you know, Middle East is not peaceful right now, obviously. And then China's knocking on the door of Taiwan. So this can get very, very bad really quick. And I can't even imagine. And I don't think it's going to be the Weekend of Bernie's candidate, Biden. I think somebody else like Whitmer or someone else is going to step up and run in his place because he can't keep going the way he's doing. But bottom line, if we get another 4 years of this garbage, it's going to rip our country apart and the world's going to be a very, very scary place. So I agree with you, Scott. Like, in times when it's not so needed, we need to have leadership. We need to have a CEO at the head of the party, right, to get good Republican candidates to win, to take back our local elections, our state, and our country. I mean, you just have to do what's good for the not only the party, but the American people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, the side that supported Christina Caramo, and really it all of the narratives on that side come from the top of the organization, and then just filtered down into and accepted as true by the rest of that organization. And it is an organization, and you know, their narratives really focused on demonizing Pete Hoekstra. But I mean, Hoekstra has there's only two qualifications right now for the leader of the Michigan Republican Party: one, that they can raise money, and two, that they know how to win elections. And he is the best that we've got in Michigan at both of those right now. He has both of those. And he has the full support of Trump. He's got a longstanding relationship with Trump. And so, you know, would be the third qualification. And so, you know, everything else is just noise. And we need to win this election. And there are so many narratives. And, you know, now that I've kind of set the table, I'd like to just kind of dive into what I found, which is early on, people started telling me about Mike Labadie. And like, he was a shadow figure behind Christina Caramo. And I was able to speak with and through just hours and hours on the phone with many, many different people over the course of weeks. I was able to speak with and persuade them to come forward, five different whistleblowers. And that was Christy Klamer, who worked very closely. She was, you know, kind of the unofficial campaign manager for the Secretary of State campaign, for Christina Caramo's Secretary of State campaign. She worked very, very closely with Christina Caramo and with Mike Labadie for 21 months of the campaign, like 80-hour work weeks. She was right there. She was the events planner, but she did everything. She wore every hat. And she's a relationship person. So she knew Mike Labadie better than just about anyone. I mean, aside from Christina Caramo, she really knew him well. And then there was Danette Besley, who was the assistant campaign manager for Christina Caramo. There was J.D. Glosser, who worked with Mike Labadie in developing Michigan Precinct First, which was an organization that was created in order to recruit precinct delegates. And it made a very strong turn in August of 22 and started aggressively censoring and removing anyone from all of their Telegram channels. They used Michigan Precinct First to create this network of Telegram channels that was really the only way that delegates had to communicate with each other and with the party, was these Telegram channels. And so they started muting people and removing them and censoring them if they asked questions that they didn't like. And after November, it was 100% focused on Christina Caramo. Anybody that supported any candidate for state chair that was not Christina Caramo, they were instantly removed. And so it was really all along, in my view, Michigan Precinct First was a vehicle that was intended to get Christina Caramo elected as state chair. I don't believe, and Mike Labadie, throughout that campaign for Secretary of State, he did many things to directly and intentionally sabotage the campaign. The most shocking of which was when Trump came out his last visit before the November election in 22. He came out and Tudor Dixon, Matt DiPerno, and Christina Caramo all spoke at that event. And they sat in the green room with President Trump, and he said, you know, he gave them kind of a list of bullet points, the things that he thought they should cover. Now, all of them did, you know, follow Trump's advice, except for Christina Caramo. She said the things that Mike Labadie wanted her to say. She talked about abortion. She talked about other things that weren't on the list that really spoke to the delegates, not to the general election audience. She ended up losing by 600,000 votes, and she never conceded, and she claimed that the cause was election fraud. There's many other things that he did to sabotage the campaign, from financially to, you know, in fundraising to preventing door knocking. Like, he actively prevented door knocking.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or go search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
So you think Mike Labadie is working for the other side that has infiltrated the grassroots? Is that what your claims?
So Mike Labadie, he registered as a Democrat in California. He's from California. He claims to people to be a, when he introduces himself, and I've talked to, since the report came out towards the end of January, I've spoken with dozens more people who had direct contact with and experience extended with Mike Labadie. They all confirmed every fact that I shared in that report. And I haven't heard anything that contradicted it. And if I do, I correct everything. If there's anything wrong in any of my stories, I'm going to correct it. So he registered as a Democrat in California end of September in 2016. So this is just weeks before Trump was elected. He probably didn't vote for Trump. He registered as a Democrat just weeks before that election. And then in 2017, right after that, he showed up in Michigan. And he gets his real estate license in 2017. He immediately gets involved in the Republican Party, going to meetings as a precinct delegate. And by 2019, he's worked his way up to be on the candidate search committee for the 11th district. And so he was looking for a candidate specifically for Secretary of State, I believe, because he wanted Benson to win. He wanted to make sure that she would be reelected. And he found that candidate in Christina Caramo, who had no qualification whatsoever for that job. She had never made more than $30,000 a year. She'd never managed anything, not even a fast food restaurant. And now all of a sudden she's running for Secretary of State. I mean, it was absurd. It was completely absurd. And nobody really ran against her.
Do you think Christina Caramo knows of Mike Labadie's past? Do you think she's in on this?
I think that she, like so many of us, gave him the benefit of the doubt. You know, we tend to do that, all of us, especially Christians, but really all of us, we tend to believe that what somebody is telling us is true. We tend to try to believe the best in people. And
you think she got played like the rest of us?
Yeah. So one of the things that I documented in that report is the specific mind control method that he engages in. And this was confirmed by everyone that I've spoken with about him, that he engages in a very specific and consistent method to gain psychological and emotional control over people. And as soon as he realizes that he can't control someone, he instantly removes them from the organization. And so, yeah, I believe now that he has his hooks so deeply into her psyche and even her heart that there's no, that she's not really in control, especially over the things that she says publicly.
That's probably why she never reached out to me, because Mike Labadie knows he could not control me. And it's funny, I just want to say, because we got some very, very heavy hitters in the grassroots. I mean, Pat Kolbeck, he described Labadie as sharp, organized consultant in high-level government matters, and he's got a lot of experience with people trying to subvert our government. Let's leave it at that. So, you know, Pat's pretty heavy in the grassroots, man, on election integrity and everything else. So do you think Pat's also got his been played in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be very direct. I mean, he is anyone who especially is this close to and knows Mike Labadie, and continues to work with him and support him, and that continues to support Christina Caramo, knowing the path of destruction that she created in the Republican Party. Now, I think that most of the grassroots are just not really aware of how much destruction that Mike Labadie created through her in the Republican Party. but it is extraordinary. There's not a single thing that she touched that that wasn't destroyed within the party.
You know, and I've obviously got a personal, experience with this. You know, if you talk, and it's not like I talk bad about Christina being a person, an activist. I think she was good at both. However, as a CEO of the Republican Party, I shared my thoughts saying, hey, she didn't run this place like a business. It should have been ran like a business. She failed as a CEO, and you know, she should go back to what she's really good at. And holy cow, it's like I burned it all down. Everybody's blaming me, calling me a rhino and everything else. I'm like, hey, look, I'm going to call out both sides. That's why I wanted to bring you on here today, is like, I'm going to call out the Democrats. And if there's something shady going on with our own party, we're going to talk about it, because we got to get to the bottom of it. Because seeing what's going on right now and this confusion that continues to build, this division, because if you speak up against it, they attack you, and they attack you in a big way, and they'll come right after you. And that's not how we move this state and this country forward. That's for sure. Yeah. Where's Mike Labadie at right now?
I'm not really sure. Dan Hartman in January of this year, Dan and Christina did an extended meeting. It was a Zoom call with everyone within the party that was invited. And I that was right as I was beginning to really research into this. And it was right before the January 6th meeting. And he, in that call, he actually said that Mike Labadie is working in many different states.
Do you know what specific states?
No, I don't. I do know that he's worked in Ohio, because I've spoken with people that are fairly high up in the party that know him pretty well, and that he's worked on, getting in with them.
So you say that you have evidence from the whistleblowers that worked on the campaigns of Christina Caromo, mm-hmm. But do you have anything like a paper trail that kind of shows where he's been, what he's done, organizations that he's been involved in that are kind of corrupt? Do you have any of that kind of concrete evidence that you can share with us?
Well, we have his voter registration in California. I have pictures of his the home that he lived in there, that was a 100-acre estate. And then there's a book that mentions him that he's very happy to talk about, which is called, I think, The Startup Game, that talks about him having been a contractor for Fortune 500 companies, and his ex-wife, I believe, and I don't have documentation of this, but that her family was owned one of these Fortune 500 companies that he was a contractor for, and he was a construction contractor, so he was building large construction projects. At least this is what he claims, and what it says in the book. For these companies. But he says, everyone that he introduces himself to, he says the way he describes himself is that he was a member of the intelligence community, and he worked with the UN to instruct diplomats on how to deal with globalists. These, he would call them evil people. And so he was going to use what he learned in against them to try to destroy them. It's very strange to me that when looking the further evidence. So, it's just like in a court of law, you're bringing in evidence from whole thing, from very, various different places to paint the whole picture. And part of that is looking at what's happened in other states. So the timing is almost identical. So in, between 2017 and 2019, Mike Labadie was getting established within the party and coming to the place that he came. And, so he was ready because, if he was an operator with the deep state, he would have known that the election fraud was coming in 2020. So how would they have behaved? And he was deployed right after Trump was elected. He came out. And at that time, Chuck Schumer said, if anyone who crosses, he said on Rachel Maddow's show, anyone who crosses the intelligence community, they have six waves from Sunday at getting back at you. And we've seen a lot of those six waves from Sunday operations. Operation Crossfire Hurricane started in June of 2016. And, that was the Russia collusion hoax, and then two impeachments. And we saw the vaccine or the virus being developed in a lab. With funding from the U.S. government through EcoHealth Alliance, we've seen, and then that was released on the world, and the timing was perfect in order to force mail-in voting in the election. Like, it just, there's so much, that going into this, that so they would have known that fraud was coming. in Idaho, Brent Reagan, at the same time was he took over Idaho Freedom Foundation, which was it filled the same role as MIPF here in Michigan. In South Carolina, Jeff Davis was who had a serious criminal background. He had been convicted of $950,000 in embezzlement. In Georgia, then he moves to South Carolina and he takes over MySCGOP, which was already, it was a pre-existing and very popular thing from the Tea Party days. And he used that, he turned it into a grassroots, a precinct delegate recruitment and indoctrination tool. In Oregon, around the same time, there were two people that started getting involved in Arizona, and Arizona, I have researched extensively. I know what is going on in Arizona almost as well, really as well as I do in Michigan. At that time, Jim O'Connor was taking over Arizona. It was the Arizona Republican Alliance, and he took that over at the same time, 17, 18. And they were all positioning themselves to, and another one in Arizona, Yale Wishnick, who I have a video where he admits to having taken classes with Saul Alinsky in the 70s, being a member of the Communist Party. And he worked for 45 years at the high level of the California Teachers Union. And then all of a sudden he's coming to Arizona and he's speaking MAGAese. You know, it's insane. Like and this is the case in every state that I've looked at, that people just come out of nowhere and they start speaking like pure MAGAese and using the same Bible verses. And this is one of the things that angers me the most as a Christian, is the way that these people use the Bible. They use the Bible as a weapon against everyone who listens to them to try to lull them into a sense of receptivity, to make them trust that what they're saying is true. And then they go and they start, putting these narratives into their minds, that many of which are deceptively, intentionally deceptive and untrue. They use the Bible as a weapon against their political opponents. They select only scripture that makes them believe that they're in a holy war and that there's enemies all around them and that God is on their side. These are not consistent with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Like Lincoln himself, Abraham Lincoln said, God is not on my side. God is always right. And the best that I can hope for is to be on God's side. And, there is none of that humility within these organizations, and they all speak the same language. They all use the same types of Bible verses in the same way. And they all started at the same time. You can't have that without some level of national coordination.
And who is that? Do you know who that is, Scott? Obviously you're dug right into this. I mean, what is your theories on that? Like, who is this ultimate person, the puppet string holder, right?
Well, ultimately, I don't know. At the very top. However, every organization, every operator leader at the top has ties to the America Project and Mike Flynn. The America Project is Mike Flynn's vehicle. Just last week, Craig Mauger with the Detroit News put out a really big bombshell of a story examined the 990s, which is the disclosure form for the America Project. Correct. And it showed $1.2 million coming to Michigan, $700,000 of which went to an organization that is, the president is listed as Lori Skibo, who was Karamo's chief of staff. So that's $700,000 going to this organization from the America Project. And there are many more ties than that. The in Arizona, the leader there, one of the leaders is Shelby Bush, who runs, she's the vice chair of Maricopa County, where 2/3 of all voters in Arizona reside. And they have done everything. They've censured people. They just passed a resolution creating a tribunal in order to remove, anyone that they want, basically that they determine is not upholding the standards of the, and does not demonstrate a willingness to abide by the Republican Party platform. And we have seen here in Michigan, we've seen the exact same thing in many counties that are run by Christina Karamo supporters, where they create essentially a tribunal to remove people. And they remove people. Just, we saw a struggle session in the first district that is overwhelmingly run by the grassroots, where Melanie Greenfield was removed. And I put up video. They didn't know that it was being recorded. It was a Zoom call struggle session that lasted for an hour where they were trying to persuade. A struggle session is what happened under Maoist China, where they would get a group of people together and they would try to shame someone into changing their beliefs and accepting the Communist Party platform. And that's exactly what this what they were doing in this meeting. They were just criticizing her and shaming her for an hour and saying, "Well, I hope you come around. I can't wait to see what you're going to say, because I hope you've changed your mind. I hope you've come around." And then they gave her about 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes to defend herself. Cut her off midterm as she was trying to defend herself against the accusations that they had levied, which were all false. And then they just voted to remove her. She was the vice chair of the district. She had done more than anyone else in District 1 to raise funds and to get Republican candidates elected. And that's what's consistent in every state. They target the people that are most effective and most experienced, most connected, that know how to get Republicans elected. That's who they target in every single state. Because if the deep state is creating an operation to infiltrate the grassroots and turn them against the Republican Party in order to destroy the Republican Party, to harm Trump's chances of getting reelected, to harm our chances of getting a Republican majority in the House and the Senate so that we can actually get anything done to drain the swamp and to get rid of them, then what they're going to do is they're going to hamper the party. They're going to drain the party of all of its talent, all of its resources. They're going to put all kinds of false narratives into the minds of the grassroots. Like, why wouldn't they go after the grassroots? Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they go after Christians? And, you know, it is absolutely insane what has happened. And it's not just that there's conflict within the party. It is not an ideological divide between the MAGA and the ultra MAGA, or the grassroots and the establishment. That's not what's happening at all. The people who removed Christina Karamo are overwhelmingly a grassroots movement. There was no leader. There's no one leader that you could point to in that movement. They came together. Then these are all people, everyone that I've spoken to, Without exception, they support Trump. They're opposed to abortion. They hate the deep state. They hate the two-tier justice system. You know, these are our people. We agree with them on everything.
And no, I experienced it firsthand. Like, a lot of these folks who finally stood up against Christina were Ryan Kelly supporters, right? And they finally said, you know, we see the writing on the wall. And I've had really great conversations with a lot of these folks who they admit, like, we were wrong. You know, we were wrong in supporting her and everything else. I have a personal question, because I started an organization called Stand Up Michigan, which after several months after we got unlocked on, I stepped down in November of 2020 after the election to focus on, you know, what possible political office I was going to run for. Mm-hmm. Does Stand Up Michigan have any of these ties into this corruption with, because you threw out General Flynn, mm-hmm. you know, so have you found anything with that?
Yes, I have. And so for one, I mean, when
you stand up Michigan,
yeah, just Stand Up Michigan. I have been looking into Stand Up Michigan, and I can say that I'm still gathering information. So I'm not ready to say, you know, to actually condemn the organization and all of that. There will be a very big report I'm working on. I have some information that I'm still developing that I've seen, and that that shows that they are. So for one, just looking at the past, this is one thing that I can say, is that they were working in the same way and recruiting delegates and even indoctrinating them and planning takeover of local counties in the same way that MIPF was. So
you think it was under the direction of Michigan Precinct First?
I think that Tammy Clark was involved in that. I do. And, you know, I've talked to many people who have been to many of the Stand Up Michigan meetings in Grand Rapids, which are, you know, and that's kind of so that Ron Armstrong and Tammy Clark go to those meetings and they run those meetings. And it is they use the same language. They use the Bible in the same way. They advance the same narratives. They support the same people. They support Christina Karamo and the people around her. One thing that you can tell the leaders of this, because they advance so many false narratives, and they so one example that's really important and prescient right now is the idea that Pete Hoekstra disenfranchised delegates all across the state and all the counties that didn't send their stuff in. So 3/4 of the counties, of the county chairs, sent their credentials to Pete Hoekstra's team and to Angela Gillissey, which was obviously Christina Karamo's team. Pete Hoekstra's team sent out that when they made the call to convention, they sent out instructions on how to register, and that, you know, they encourage people, they encourage every chair, register for both if you want, you know, do let your delegates decide. But the 24 counties that are all completely diehard supporters of the chairs or supporters of Christina Karamo, they refused to send their credentials in. They just refused. They disenfranchised their own delegates. They did not allow their delegates to choose. Then further, Ken Beyer and Dare Rendon held alternate caucuses on the same day. And they encouraged all of their people to go to those caucuses. They disenfranchised their delegates even further, because it was obvious at that point to anybody who had read the bylaws that anybody who doesn't go to the caucuses, to the official district caucuses, that their votes aren't going to count. It's, you know, that was just a fake meeting. They created division. Ken Beyer and Dare Rendon created division there. They disenfranchised their own delegates. The responsibility is 100% on the county chairs and Dare Rendon and Ken Beyer for all of those people being disenfranchised. When they went, those who did go that weren't credentialed, those who did go, it was up to each district to vote to whether or not to allow those people in. And most of the overwhelming majority of those who went and showed up in Grand Rapids on March 2nd were credentialed in. I was there. I was floating from district to district because they're all in separate rooms. And I covered the whole thing on Twitter. And there was one district that I know of that voted, where the delegates voted not to receive the uncredentialed delegates. Every other one did bring them in. The numbers were overwhelming. It was like 95% of those who went there were brought in and were allowed to vote. Had Dare Rendon and Ken Beyer not done that and said, well, you know, show up on March 2nd, Grand Rapids, they, most of them, if not all of them, would have been credentialed in. And so, but they're saying they want this victim narrative because this is how they manipulate people. And we see this on the left. The left does the same thing. They create these victim narratives that are false in order to emotionally manipulate people into continuing to be on their side. And that's exactly what they are doing to all of the delegates that follow them. It's a false narrative. And anyone who is, especially on the higher level, anyone who has read the bylaws and who is advancing that narrative is lying to you. Because it's just clear that, you know, they shouldn't be credentialed. And that includes Turning Point, by the way. So, you know, Turning Point, they really supported Bernadette Smith. And I had a conversation with the regional manager of Turning Point last week or 2 weeks ago. And she told me that there needs to be a runoff, and that the bylaws say that there needs to be runoff. That's completely untrue. And she's not even from Michigan. And she's going on and on and on about how Bernadette, you know, all these people were disenfranchised. I'm like, you're got to be kidding me. Like, you can't. You are creating the division here.
That's the frustrating part. I mean, that's why, like, people just don't know what to believe. I mean, I'm sure the people on Christina's side are saying, you know, Scott McMahon, he's the bad actor. He's the one creating the division. I mean, you're going to get attacked for this interview just as much as I will. But I mean, these conversations need to happen. They truly do. And if I am very concerned about what I just heard with Stand Up Michigan, I hope it's not the case, to be honest with you, because that was, we did a lot of good with the several months that I was there with bringing people. But if that got infiltrated where it started to, and maybe they knew, maybe they didn't know, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for anyone in the room, but the General Flynn thing, I mean, he's like the grassroots baby, right? So, I mean, that's going to hurt a lot of people if that comes out to be true. A lot of people have to eat a big old, not pie, pie store of humble pie. That is for sure. It's concerning. But if you kind of just look at it logically, what would I do if I was a Marxist progressive movement and I wanted to bring down the party of the Constitution, the party that believes in this idea called America. Well, we can't beat them with policy because they all know that their policies suck, right? So how we do it? We do it from within. We infiltrate it. We create corruption. We create division where people start to second guess the party. And they're so busy with fighting amongst each other, they're not seeing us take back ground at our local communities, our high schools, our school boards, our colleges, our businesses. It just goes on and on, our city councils. And that's what they've done. That's what they have done.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those people, Scott? What do you say to people like me, right, that are just like, holy cow, what do I even believe anymore? Like, this guy's throwing out some freaking nukes against General Flynn, who I followed. And if General Flynn's involved, is Clay Clark?
Yes, absolutely. So on that, so Clay Clark and General Flynn, they run an organization of podcasters, a network of podcasters.
Yeah, they invited me to their gosh darn free little seminar.
Yeah. So did you go?
No.
Okay, good. I talked to somebody who went. And this is what happens at these events. So they have, he went to the one in Tulsa that happened a couple months ago.
That was the one.
Yeah. And so they have Mike Flynn, they've got Clay Clark, they've got Ann Vandersteel, Laura Logan, all the people, Joel Oatman. And these are the people at the top of their organization. They talk about like how to market your podcast, how to build your audience. But really, it's just like pep talks, and it's really mostly about what their message and what their narratives are that they want to advance. And then they get you in a room one-on-one and with a scheduler, and they schedule Clay Clark, they schedule Mike Flynn, they schedule, you know, others within that network on your show. And then the whole time that Clay Clark, and you can go on Clay Clark's Twitter, it's remarkable. He does like 5 shows a day for other people, and he'll go on somebody's show and do what we're doing now. But the entire time, what he'll do is build that person up, build up the host. He will talk about how great they are. He'll find something unique about them, and he'll talk about that over and over and over again, why everybody needs to listen to this person. They do all kinds of cross promotion to build their audience up. So they might start with an audience of 5,000 to 8,000 followers, but within a short time, they'll get up to 100,000 followers through this cross promotion that they do. Now, one thing that was really interesting, and the guy that I talked to that did this, I asked him if he would come on my show to talk about it. And he said, no, absolutely not. Because this is like a gravy train for him. This is really huge for his career to build him up, to get him to the place where he can be making more money doing this. And he didn't want to risk that. But so when the bridge in Baltimore was collapsed a couple weeks ago, Mike Flynn went on and he was going on this really direct. He created this narrative that it was a terrorist act, that it was a black swan event. And I mean, it's ridiculous. If it was a terrorist act, it would have been done during rush hour. there's no way that was a terrorist act. I mean, it was a ridiculous assertion. But he said it with such authority. And I don't think that he did that in order to accomplish anything, because it didn't really accomplish anything, except it was a test of the effectiveness of his network to see how that narrative could filter through that network and how much control he has over that network. And it's pretty astonishing.
Was it successful?
Yeah, absolutely.
It really infiltrated the network. So yeah, They're controlling the narrative just like corporate media.
That's right. Mike Flynn was the director of the Defense Intelligence Administration, which is it's the DOD's version of the CIA. So he was like the CIA director, except for the DOD, the Department of Defense, under Obama. He was that under Obama. And the only reason why he was fired in 2014 is because he was too close to Russia. He was paid $45,000 in December of 2015 for a speech that he gave in Moscow. And then 2 months later, he's on Trump's team. In February of 2016, he's on Trump's team, just a few months before the start of Operation Crossfire Hurricane. Obama went on this whole tirade saying Mike Flynn's the most dangerous person alive, and you know, he's even more dangerous than Trump, almost. Like that was the message. But I think that the reason why he said that was to build his credibility on our side. And
it's overwhelming.
then he was indicted in at the beginning of Trump's presidency, as soon as Trump took office, and for stepping into a, it was clearly a perjury trap with the FBI. And you can't tell me that a 33-year veteran of the intelligence community, who was at the very, very top of the intelligence community, didn't know what he was stepping into. I mean, how could he have not have known what he was stepping into there? And, you know, that was so effective at derailing Trump's presidency from the very start. He knew that he would be indicted, but he knew he wouldn't get, you know, he knew he wouldn't end up going to jail over it. So, you know, just, and that Trump would ultimately pardon him. Of course he would.
Scott, let me ask you this, because my platform resonates through the grassroots, the people that love me and hate me, unfortunately. Who do you want to hold accountable? Who do you want to interview? And we'll call them out right now that they're not answering your phone calls, or you're not, they're not reaching out. Who do you need to interview to really expose this stuff? Or at least, you know, you've said a lot of names, right? Mm-hmm. That want to come on and talk about the accusations. I mean, who are they? Obviously Mike Labadie's not going to come on your show. Mm-hmm. No, he's always stays in the background. That's what I've read. Okay. I mean, who do you need to come on and say, hey, you know what? I found a lot of stuff. We need to talk.
Sure. Well, you know, if you're talking about here in Michigan.
Yes, we'll start there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the problem with it is that, so when I listen to someone like, so there's a Stand Up Michigan meeting in Oakland County, and I'm going to be releasing the audio recording of that this week. Melissa Williams runs the Stand Up Michigan in Oakland County. And she opened the meeting saying police have already been reported or informed that if there's anyone recording this meeting, that they can come in and just remove you. And so I have a recording and I don't even know. So I couldn't even say who did the recording because it was sent to me through two or three people. So I don't even know who did the recording. Yeah. So you're not gonna be able to find them. But in that meeting, they were going on and on about how it was a deep state operation to remove Christina. And the proof of that was on December 2nd at the meeting in which the meeting was canceled originally. And then Christina called a Zoom meeting. She wanted to hold it virtually. And she did that at 3:00 in the morning, the day before of the meeting. And another alternate physical location was held at which most people showed up and they had quorum at that meeting. And it's there that they signed the petition to remove Karamo. That's where the whole process started. So they're saying that this was a deep state operation. And the proof of that is that the pastor of the church that was initially going to hold that meeting, that pastor received death threats, and not only him, but his whole family. This was their revelation that they were saying. And so Christina was saying this, Lori Skibo said this, and I think Dr. Phil O'Halloran said this. And so all three of them were going on this. And it's just not true. I called the police department. They never even received a phone call from the pastor or that church, no one around there.
In the state of Michigan, you only need one party consent yourself to record any conversation, correct? I think that's law.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing wrong. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's not like they did anything wrong, but what they would do is they would prevent that person, whoever recorded it, from going to meetings in the future. They would ban.
Correct.
So, my point in bringing that up is that they deliver something that's clearly false. Like it's just a completely false narrative. Not only that, but they talked about how there was this supposed pro-Palestinian rally that was going to happen at that church at that meet because the Republicans were there. And we have a vice chair of, in Michigan, we've got vice chairs for each major constituency, and we have a vice chair of for the Muslim community. If there was a pro-Palestinian rally plan there, he would have known it. He would have known who to, because you know he's part of the Muslim community, so he knows. People. Yeah.
Yep.
And he said there was no protest planned. And so, you know, it's my belief, and this is my opinion, but it's not just my opinion. Many other people hold this belief that it was actually the Christina Karamo team that advanced the narrative that there was going to be a pro-Palestinian rally in order to try to scare the pastor into stopping that meeting. And so, you know, because they didn't want to hold it in person. They wanted to hold it virtually because they can mute people, and they do. And even on that meeting, she ended up holding a meeting. It didn't get quorum. Someone at Tim Ross, who was on the budget committee, he joined in that meeting. He had his hand raised the entire 3 hours of Christina Caramo's Zoom call, and he never called on her. This is a direct violation of Robert's Rules of Order. You have to be able to speak. Anyone has to be able to speak up, and with a call to order or a call to question. And, but they don't observe the bylaws. So, and that's another thing that the disruptors have in common in every single state. The bylaw is rules for me, but not for thee. It is
absolutely familiar.
Yeah.
The good old Democrats.
Yeah, it's exactly like the Democrats. There is, in every way, when you look at this, it's exactly like the Democrats. And you said something earlier that I thought was really interesting, which is, you know, what do you do with this? You know, how do you, like, who can you trust? And that's often the first question that's asked of me. Don't trust me. Don't take my word for any of this. But you can't trust anyone. There is only one person that you can trust, and that's yourself. There is no one else that you can trust. You have to look at the evidence. You have to clear your mind of anything that anyone has ever told you. And question everything. That's the only way that we can move forward as a party and as a country, if we really learn how to apply logic and reason to the evidence. Because every psychological operation, we see it on the left with Trump derangement syndrome, they have lost the ability to apply logic and reason to the evidence. They don't even have the ability to engage with logically in
anything. Brainwashing.
It is. Yeah. And that is what has happened to many of us. It had happened to me. And the only reason why is that I was able to rise out of this is because as a reporter, I was just committed to following the evidence wherever it led me. And that is, we all have to be reporters like that. We all have to have that same mentality of I'm just going to look at the evidence. I'm not going to believe anything that someone tells me is being true. I'm just going to look at the evidence. And that's why, to me, speaking to someone like Christina Caramo, Lori Skibo, Dan Hartman, Jim Kopis, and I've spoken to many of these people, it's not really that valuable because they're not truthful. So talking to them doesn't prove anything. And that's like, you know, talking to me doesn't prove anything, but what I'm sharing is factually based. And I've produced the evidence. On my Substack, I've written almost 50,000 words, and I've got hours and hours of podcasts, firsthand testimony of people who have witnessed these things. This is, firsthand testimony is admissible in court. That is evidence. And I've got documents. I've got all kinds of things on my website that holds up what I'm saying. And if anything that I've reported is factually incorrect, please share the evidence that it is. I'm speaking to you, Pat Kolbeck, anyone, share the evidence. I will very, very happily engage with that and look at that. And if I am wrong, I will correct. That's my commitment to God. I'm doing this not because it's fun. Like, you know, they slander me in all kinds of ways already before the show. And so
I feel like I want to vomit. I'm not going to lie, with what you just said and revealed today. And I want to direct everybody, you know, in the description of this video, once this live is done, you can go and you can get Scott's Substack. I mean, the link is in there for all of you, to get this information. And because he's right, you're right, Scott. You know, you can't trust anyone, unfortunately, but if you just take a step back, take a deep breath, and then look at the information logically, get away from what everyone's telling you, what it says, just read it for yourself and divulge that information. That's how you can make an empowered, educated decision. And I think, and you see it on both the right and the left, these people are so brainwashed. And when you give them information, they're like, nope, it's not real. And you're like, well, yeah, it is. It's right here. Like, it's right in front of you. We dealt with it through the pandemic and everything else. Like, everything that was science was no longer science. And it was just insanity. Wow. I don't know what to say. I usually have an answer, or at least a direction, to tell people to go towards, but I just, I have to digest everything that you said today and start doing my own research. But, you know, if anyone has any information for Scott, you know, email him, get a hold of him. you know, give them that information, a recording, whatever, because I think this information all just needs to get out and we need to dissect it as a movement of people to make sure that we're doing what's right and get rid of these bad actors and call them out and, hey, say you're up to no good, man. I think we need to know those things. And especially a lot of these organizations popped up throughout the pandemic. Some great, some obviously not so great, that are just starting to really create a lot of problems when there doesn't have to be any problems. That's for sure. What would you like to leave the audience today with, Scott?
Yeah, thank you. And that's really actually a message of, reason to be optimistic. They would not be engaging in this operation against us if they didn't fear that we could win. They wouldn't be trying to put President Trump in jail and doing everything they can to stop him if they didn't fear that he could win and that we could win. Because Trump's victory is our victory. It's the only path. It's the only chance. It's really the only hope that we have in a reasonable time frame to prevent a complete far left takeover of the judiciary and the confiscation of all of our constitutional rights. And so, we need to not only get Trump elected, but we need to get everyone down ballot elected. One of the narratives that they advance is this idea of the purity test idea, that if you're not 100% with me, then you're my enemy. And that's ridiculous. Reagan said, if you agree with me on 80%, then you're my friend and my ally. You're not my 20% enemy. And so, we need to, whoever, for example, with the U.S. Senate race here in Michigan, whoever emerges from that, it might take swallowing a lot of pride in order to vote for that person, whoever that might be. I think especially if it's Mike Rogers. Yeah. I don't like Mike Rogers, but if he is there, Trump has his reasons there for endorsing him, and I don't necessarily agree with those reasons, and that doesn't mean I will vote for him in just because of his endorsement. In the primary, but after the primary, if he emerges or whoever emerges, even if it's, Amash or, somebody that I really don't like, that I think is a Democrat, they're still going to be better having an R next to their name than the other side. So if we only agree with them 60% of the time, that's better than 0%. And if they're going to vote for, and support Trump's judicial nominees, that's all that matters. So what your message and the reason why I approached you, Garrett, and wanted to come on your show is because I think your message is really the key, which is we need to get over our pride and we need to stop listening to people that want us to hate other Republicans. And we need to come together as a party and form a coalition of center left Democrats, independents, moderates, MAGA, everyone. We need to, this is the way that we win. And so, in Argentina last year, they had it worse than we do. They had been under overt socialist rule for decades. You think they had fair elections there? Anyone who says at this point, if they drone on and on about election fraud, they're doing that as part of a PSYOP to discourage you from voting. Because there's one thing that we can do to fix our elections, and that is elect Republicans. So we need to go out even tomorrow. If you're in one of the Josh Powell's or Ron Singer's districts, if you know anybody there, we need to get them elected. And this is something we need Republicans in the House. This is two House races that will prevent a litany of stuff that's already been written by the Democrats. If the Democrats win these races tomorrow, they're going to advance all kinds of crap that none of us want. Homeschool, restrictions on homeschooling, so much stuff that is going to make our lives here in Michigan terrible. And the governor is obviously going to sign it. So we need to get them. Everything depends on right now. We need to focus tomorrow on this special election tomorrow. But we got to work together to get Republicans elected. And that's the bottom line. We need to get Republicans elected in November. Everything else is noise. Stop worrying about election fraud. There's going to be fraud. Okay. We just need to outbeat it. That's exactly what Trump says. We need to outvote the fraud. At this point, that's what we need to do. We need to vote early and we need to bank our vote so that the Republican Party knows how to spend their resources on the people that haven't voted yet.
And absolutely. And I just was having a conversation with somebody on my platform a couple weeks ago where they're like, well, I'm not voting. I'm like, do you understand when you stay home, that's a vote for them. That's like, just get there and vote whether you believe it's going to count or not. We need just to overwhelm the system so they can't.
Yep.
I mean, that's what it is. And I think there's going to be an overwhelming turnout for President Trump. And that's why, you know, this probably from your research, they're setting up roadblocks already in the judicial system, everything else to stop him from doing the things that he wants to do when he gets elected here in November again. Scott, my gosh, thank you so much for the information. Again, in the link, folks, or in the description, there's a link to his Substract. You can subscribe to it and get this information, read it, read through it. And I'm coming on your show next week, Scott, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I can't wait. And we'll talk more about Stand Up Michigan then.
Yeah, that sounds great, yeah, man. So I look forward to that. And I got to give a shout out to Scott's mom, Kathy. All right. Thank you, Kathy, for having a wonderful son. So I wanted to give her a shout out. Brother, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Garrett.
All right, folks. I'll talk to you soon. All right, we're off, buddy. Wow.